Good morning. We're going to start our meeting of the House Education Committee. I'm calling our meeting to order. Today is Monday, April 14th, 2025, and the time is 8:04 a.m. Present with us in the room today are Representative Eichheit, Representative Elam, Representative Dibert, Representative Schwanke, Co-Chair Representative Andy Story, and myself, Co-Chair Rebecca Himshute. We have a quorum to conduct business. I would like to remind members, including Member Schwanke, to silence their cell phones.
I know.
We are in Betty Davis Committee Room 106 in the State Capitol Building in Juneau. The documents for today's meeting have been distributed to members and are available on the table outside the door and are on basis. We did have a mix-up with one presentation, so that will be switched out on basis before we hear it here on the record. So please be patient with that. I'd like to thank our recording secretary, Cale Brown. Morning, Cale. Our moderator from the Juneau LAO, Zach Lawhorn. Thank you, Zach. And our committee aides, Tammy Smith and Claire Fordyce, are scrambling right now to get us back on track with a little mix-up. So today's agenda, we have two 2.5 items. Actually, it's more like four items by the time we get done with all of it. We have the presentation by AASB, where they're going to talk about their organization. And then specifically, we asked them to drill down on one, so this is the 1.5, to talk about the career guides work that they've been doing, Alaska's Future Workforce Career Guides Collaboration. And we might start with that in just a minute while we figure out the rest of it. And then at 9 o'clock, we're going to hear from two guests from the Alaska Council of School Administrators. We're going to hear an overview of ACSA and then the newest division of ACSA, which is the Alaska Educator Retention and Recruitment Center, and hear about the Alaska Teacher Retention and Recruitment Playbook from the Department of Education and Early Development. So really, it's kind of four presentations in two. You have copies of all the presentations, and then if time allows, we might go to bills previously heard, but we're going to focus on the presentations this morning, mostly. Okay, so let's start with Association of Alaska School Boards. I don't know if you both want to come up, or just Emily, for Emily's part. Okay. So we're going to start with Family Engagement Manager, Emily Ferry. If you could come forward, put your name on the record, and this presentation will be about the career guides. And if you're both up here, you could go ahead and put both your names on record, and we'll get started. Thank you. Good morning. I'm glad you're here.
Good morning. I'm Emily Ferry. I work with the Association of Alaska School Boards. You'll hear a little bit more about that from our executive director.
Good morning. My name is Lon Garrison. I'm the executive director of the Association of Alaska School Boards.
But first, we're going to drill down into one of my favorite topics. So thanks for permitting me this opportunity. So a couple of weeks ago, I was here in the legislature giving a presentation with a group of people, including representatives of these organizations, the Alaska Workforce Alliance, DEED, the Department of Labor, University of Alaska. And we were talking about Alaska's workforce future, which is the hot-off-the-press cross-industry report on how our path, basically, to improving workforce development here in the state. That Lunch and Learn was sponsored by Senator Kelly Merrick, and we're going to spend a little time drilling down into one of the key strategies. There's six main strategies that this report identifies, and the goal really is to address the workforce needs of Alaska. Right now, we have a 5% decrease in working age families here in the state. We're experiencing net migration, and we know that about 20,000 jobs will need new employees. So, you know, where are we going to find these workers, or how are we going to grow them? So career guides is one of the six strategies. It's connected with career awareness, and that's the one that we're really going to explore today. So career awareness is really about strengthening that pathway. How do people find themselves into their employment? And one of the key strategies, again, is having an actual human being who can help young adults or adults. In our case, we're really focused on students, right? We're a K-12 organization. That's who Lon and I are thinking about on a daily basis. But how do we help them plug into those opportunities? And Alaska has, as represented by these outlets, an amazing amount of opportunities. Our students, the plugs in this analogy, need someone to help plug them into the right opportunity. Those plugs aren't necessarily going to find their way into the outlet without that assistance. So that's kind of a basic definition of a career guide or coach or advisor. You could call that human being any number of things, and they could show up in any number of places, our schools being a main place where they might connect. About 7 years ago, I was tasked with working with school districts and workforce development organizations here in Southeast Alaska to explore this problem. This is a graph that you get every year. It's from the Higher Education Almanac, which is put out by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. Their next report might be coming out very soon. But the trend has been the same. This is showing the rate of high school seniors who are enrolling in a 2 or 4 year degree program. And as you can see, in 2013, in our state, we were above the national average at 52%. Today, we're well below the national average. We're well below any other state at 33%. So that means that we're struggling to plug students into the opportunities that are available.
Ms. Ferry, I'm going to interrupt for just a second to welcome Representative Underwood at 810. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. And it's not just about those 2 and 4 year degree programs. This data from the Measure of America was actually shared with me by Representative Kai Holland, and I feel like it's a really important statistic for us to keep an eye on. It is called the disconnected youth rate, and that is the percent of youth ages 16 to 24 who aren't connected to school or work. So it's going beyond just that 2 and 4 year degree program to capture, again, are our young adults finding their way into meaningful opportunities? And with one of the highest youth disconnection rates in the country, we like to flip this and think about this as an opportunity to fill our workforce needs and an opportunity to give our young adults hope for their future. So how to do that, right? That's the big question. That's the thing we all want. But what are the strategies that really have a high impact? And to discover that, we've been working with thought leaders like Dr. Janelle Vaness, who's now at Alaska Pacific University, as well as convening Alaskans from across the state, whether it's the vice president of the university system to rural school board members, students, families, those employers, higher education folks, a wide range of people. And one of the main strategies that we've landed on is having that human being, that career guide, that can help our students navigate and find those opportunities. Now, this isn't a new strategy. This has been tried and done with success before in our state. The picture you see here is of Chuck. He was a career guide at Bethel Regional High School under a grant-funded program. That grant-funded program ended at the end of 2016. This chart is showing the rate of high school seniors enrolling in those 2 or 4 year degree programs. So you can see in 2016, Bethel Regional High School had 65% of their students enrolling in those programs. That's double our rate today. So we can do this. We have done this. We know how to do this. But as often happens with these pilot projects or grant-funded programs, the state opted not to continue that or fund that. We were running out of money in 2016. Might sound familiar. And so we cut that program, our rates fell, and we're kind of back to where we are today. The good news is that there are a lot of people working together to lean in and develop this strategy and hopefully create some sustainable models for it. There's a really exciting collaboration going on between Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, Bristol Bay Region, CTE, the Department of Labor, the Department of Education, to pilot out, again, this career guide model and really craft a model that can work here in Alaska and meet our students' needs. And we're also working hard to track that data so we can come back to you with, again, some more evidence to say, hey, this is a really cost-effective strategy to invest in to grow our workforce. I want to talk.
Okay, maybe we could stop here and take a few questions. Representative Story.
Thank you. Through the chair, welcome, Ms. Ferry and Mr. Garrison. It's great to see you guys here today. But isn't it important to take note that this regional career guide pilot program is different from the program we had before with Mr. Chuck, in that the people were stationed in the high school and it wasn't through the Department of Labor and the current method. So I just wanted to note that, and I'm hoping everyone's taking a note of that to see what the results are and if it would be better to go back and have them based in the school so the kids get to know them. And it would be interesting to know at what point what the differences of the program are, but I just will stop there. I won't ask you what the differences are now, but I just hope that your organization is taking note of that.
Great.
Thanks.
I had a follow-up question as well, and that's on that same slide, if we could go back one. I did meet with Christy Ford at SHI, and she had very good data on what they've been doing in Heidelberg and down in Metlakatla, and it was phenomenal, really exciting. So my question is, if we could just go back to this slide, right here, and how are each of these programs being funded? And so in SHI's instance, like Representative Story was saying, the person is not embedded in the community or in the school. They're traveling out and then I think making contact by phone and that kind of thing. But they're able to, with one person, cover two different districts. Mm-hmm. So are these, with these three different things, could you give us a little detail on each of the three things and how they each work? Just pretty concisely.
Yeah, thank you. These are great questions. And I would say that my role is to kind of champion this model generally. And so what we see both here in Alaska and in the lower 48 is that it really looks different in each community. And, you know, we could probably drill down really closely and say, is it better to have that person as a school employee, or is it better to have them as a partner to the school, but really focused on that strategy? And I think we could spend a long time debating the merits of either model. And again, it looks different in each community. We've been working a little bit with Root Ed Alliance, which is a philanthropic organization that has supported career guides in Missouri, Texas, and other places. And so we've been recruiting them to come to Alaska to say, if you want to see rural, come hang out with us. We're your spot. And each one looks a little different. And so I'm actually going to talk a little bit about what it looks like maybe in the school when it shows up there, and then when it's kind of exists a little bit outside the school. I think what really matters is that relationship. Maybe not even so much who that employee is, but is that person able to coordinate well? If the school has a counselor like they do in Metlakatla, I know the counselor has said, this is amazing. I have 150 students, sixth grade to 12th, that I have to think about. I'm not thinking about, you know, waking up every day thinking about what do my juniors and seniors need to do to make their plan for after high school. So to partner with someone who's thinking about that on a regular basis makes her job easier and more impactful. And one of the analogies that I've heard from Dr. Mandy Savage-Romer, who's out of the Harvard Grad School of Education, but she likens this strategy to having your general practitioner as your main counselor, the folks that hopefully you do have a main counselor, not all of our schools do. But then the career guide is like the specialist. And the nice thing about the career guide model is you don't need to have a master's degree to serve this role. You know, we've talked with people who maybe have an associate's degree or just have some really relevant life experience. And so part of the model here is training those folks to know what those steps are to help coach their students. So not only do we need people to fill these roles, but we also need to support them and what are those best practices. And then to your question about funding, how are they funded? Sometimes school districts can include them into their regular budget. We're seeing less and less of that as schools have had to cut their budgets. It's one of the things that, you know, is not in the classroom or whatnot. So that gets cut and we see the results. We've been backfilling with federal funds. So there's been a lot of federal grants over the past couple years that have helped tribes and other entities like Sea Alaska Heritage Institute bring on career guides and career guides programs, but I have a very real fear that those funds are also going to go away soon. So how the sustainable funding is something that still needs to be mapped out a little bit more if we're going to, you know, really invest in the strategy.
And could we take just a second? Thank you for that. Was a really great. That's exactly what I was wanting to know. Could we go back to the slide called Opportunity, the one from the Measure of America? Yeah. So I know that AASB is very focused on culturally relevant schools and classrooms. And so in this, when we talk about 16 to 24-year-olds who aren't connected to school or work, is subsistence included in the idea of school or work? Because it's a really important part of many communities. So how does that fit into that classification?
Yeah, that is such a great question. And I think that's something that we need to, I skipped over that, but it's something that we need to consider when we're looking at these statistics. We probably won't ever have, you know, 100, we probably shouldn't have 100% connection rate because we know that our young adults might be being a provider in a much different way that doesn't show up in our national statistics. And that's a great thing if they're playing a role that is meaningful to them, to their community. But we also know that a lot of young adults have not found their way to meaningful contribution, whatever that looks like.
And there could be a combination. You might be feeding your village and so.
Right, right.
Okay. Oh, sorry, Representative Eichheit.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, on this slide with the disconnected youth, very interesting to look at the different states. But the question is, what factors account for this difference? And, you know, I had a lot of experience in the Midwest in my prior life, and I can see a different pattern from, say, the South Central United States. So just can you provide some clarity what explains this level of disconnected youth?
Yeah, that probably could be a whole additional session. And, you know, you look at states that have high rates of connection, like North Dakota. They have a pretty small population, and they've had, you know, some economic booms recently. So I would say, you know, in that state, that's probably related to the high rates of employment for young folks. So it's beyond just that career guide as human beings helping connect. I think another important thing, two other things about this data that I am familiar with. One, that Alaska Native and Indigenous youth have demographically like about a 25% disconnection rate. So you see that maybe in the state rates of New Mexico, Arizona, and other places where we have higher demographics of Alaska or of American Indian students and young adults. Another connection to this employment opportunities and schooling opportunities is there's a high degree of correlation with risky behavior, suicidal behavior, and so forth. Hope for the future is a huge protective factor when it comes to mental health. I've seen it in my own kids' lives and my kids' friends' lives. You know, I have my friend and neighbor had a very serious suicide attempt in eighth grade. She spent months in out-of-state treatment. She has given me permission to share the story of hers. But when she entered high school and she got into a small engine repair class and she started working with a garage here in town, and she said, In 20 years, I want to own a garage. I want to do this work. And suddenly she could see herself 20 years from now, whereas the year before she couldn't see past tomorrow, right? So that's one of the things that we're doing here. We're not just filling our workforce needs. We're providing hope for the future.
Representative Schwanke.
Thank you, Chair Hemshute. Thank you, Ms. Ferry. I want to go back to the slide right before this. I had a question just to kind of clarify it. I know when we see these kinds of figures, lots of things come into our mind, but I just want to clarify this is just looking at the kind of a college university post-secondary. That's specifically what this is measuring.
Yeah, thank you for that question. And part of the reason we look at this data is because it's the data we have. The national we are trying to encourage places like AvTech and other career training centers to also contribute to this national database. But one of the reasons we look at 2 and 4 year degree programs is just because we have a better data set to show us these trends.
Follow up?
Just kind of 2 observations from my rural districts. It really, to me, I would love to see a slide. I would love to see a correlation between this data and the price tuition.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would guess that they are very closely negatively correlated. And then the other thing that is definitely coming up more and more, I know with the young people that I'm around, my own son and his cohort, the starting wage of a job that you get following some post-secondary education versus not. I think mm-hmm. I received another little meme from him last night on that exact topic. I'd be glad to show it to you. So, we have a lot of other factors, that are playing in for sure as to why kids are or are not enrolling.
Mm-hmm.
And I know just looking around, I never thought I'd be in like the old kids group, but I know when I was young, it was just the mantra, you go to college, that's what mm-hmm. you did. And so my husband and I both went the college route, and it's very interesting, the discussion around that mm-hmm. certainly has shifted with young people. As someone with a master's in science, I worry that we don't have people going into those career fields mm-hmm. as often as they did when I was young 30 years mm-hmm. ago. So it's been very interesting. I'm all for CTE and I love the concept, but we do have to be very careful on how we balance the opportunities we place in front of our young people and make sure that we get them going in all directions.
Representative Schwanke, you are forever young, as far as I can tell. We should continue on here. I think we were going to try to get through this in about 20 minutes, and we've spent 25 on it. It's a great topic. We don't want to go too fast, but definitely want to make sure we have time for everybody. So, okay.
Well, I feel like Representative Schwanke, you queued up this slide perfectly to say that traditionally, as you mentioned, career guidance has looked like go get a bachelor's degree, go get a master's degree, move far away from your family and community, which is not oftentimes what our students really want. They might say that because that's what every 17-year-old says, right? But really working with students to find the path that works for them. And I mentioned working with Root Ed to craft a model that works for Alaskans, and we've actually added provider as one of the pathways to really recognize that subsistence role is really important here in Alaska, as well as military apprenticeship, kind of what does that workforce entrance look like, or 2 and 4 year degree program. So finding the right fit, the right path, and thinking about where does that student ultimately want to be, not that one size fits all that we might have seen in the past. The next few slides are just a couple anecdotes, stories to illustrate the power of this work. This is an excerpt from a letter that a parent here in Juneau sent to the Juneau School Board last year. It was about the career guide, Miss Dean, who was working in their school. She was funded, actually, it was she was funded through a grant, but she was a school employee. That grant ended and the schools consolidated, and so the schools went from two to one. So students in Juneau are no longer receiving this level of support. But the student that we're talking about was an AP student, 4.0, you know, did all the activities, and her mom, you know, she was on track to enroll in college, but she identified the support that Miss Dean played as the thing she was most grateful for. And she said, "I looked to her senior year with dread." And she also noted that this individual helped her lift her daughter's potential in ways that she as a parent couldn't. So just recognizing that partnership and, you know, kind of no matter what student you are, you can benefit from this. Another really great paper was written by Danielle Carlson as part of her master's thesis. She grew up in Sandpoint, graduated from UAS, worked at UAS, and is now back in Sandpoint working as a counselor. She interviewed 11 peers of hers, and she noted that they all had a common theme of incredible resilience, which we often look to as like something to be celebrated, a strength, but in this case, she said, you shouldn't have to be tough as nails to get a degree in the state. This is a problem with our systems here, and we need to change our systems. So this quote, expecting Indigenous students to be resilient in order to succeed is unrealistic, unfair, and a perspective to be reevaluated.
If I could just offer something there. I was in CAKE for the apology ceremony last fall, and I was talking about resilience, and someone, I don't want to say corrected, but offered a different perspective and said, hang on a second, you know, you're putting, I think of it as a celebration. It's amazing what this community is able to do, how resilient they are. And yet it's putting a burden on that community to be something or to do something that other communities aren't expected to do. And I'm saying, aren't you great, without even realizing the, I guess, added weight that gives to that person or to that community. So it was something I had not thought about.
Yeah. I feel like this is a very powerful perspective. And I think the individuals took a lot of pride in the fact that they were resilient, personal pride, and yet recognizing that, you know, this is not a great system if we want to improve our workforce development prospects. And lastly, this might speak a little bit to that the cost factor. What does post-secondary education cost? And actually, statistically, here in Alaska, we do a better job of that than most other states. We have the fourth lowest cost burden of any state in the nation for post-secondary education. So that essentially means, like, we do a good job of making it affordable. It's more affordable to go to our university system than it is to pay for childcare on a yearly basis here in Alaska. And there's a fair amount of money that is left on the table by Alaskan students. So the free application for federal student aid, or FAFSA, have folks heard of that? So that's a key step to access federal funds, federal Pell Grant, as well as our own Alaska Performance Scholarship and school-based scholarships. Completion rate of that has been lower than any other state for a number of years. Actually, there's a tracker, and you can see week by week. So this is as of April 4th of this year, 21% of our seniors had completed the FAFSA, compared to 44% as a national average. So there's an estimate from, this is again in the Higher Education Almanac, but that students are leaving $7.4 million on the table. And that's not state dollars, that's federal dollars that we're not tapping into. So again, it's about taking that plug and getting it to the right opportunity, that financial, those funds that are there to help support students. So just to wrap up and bring us back to this plan, two other key strategies, one of the skilled workforce. Our K-12 system is the foundation of developing that skilled workforce. And then for retaining Alaskans, recruiting and retaining Alaskans, we know that quality schools is the number one quality of life factor that families are considering when they are thinking, do I stay or do I go? That's true anecdotally of families I know that have chosen to leave the state. And that's also something that the chief of staff of the Air Force has taken note of. I think it's maybe not surprising that our investment in the K-12 system mirrors this trend. But I also want to close on the opportunity. So one of the guy on the right in this picture is my son. I had a chance to visit UAF with him a couple of weeks ago when we were in town for a hockey tournament. And we were blown away by the opportunity that exists there and the affordability. I was thrilled. And I think about this stuff all the time, and I still didn't really know what a gem that we have here in the state. We just need to help more of our students connect to these opportunities.
Okay, are there any questions for Ms. Ferry? I think there is there one more slide?
Nope.
Okay. Representative Eichheit.
Thank you, Chair Hemshoot. Through the chair, just mostly a comment. I find this very exciting, what you're talking about. I taught for 25 years in the state of Wisconsin, which I noticed had a fairly low disconnectedness according to that graph. And this just strikes me with my view of education as an ecosystem. And what I mean by that is we know that more complex ecosystems with more parts are more stable, but, you know, there are parts missing. And one of the things I've seen over the years is students don't think about their future. I taught 8th grade and 9th grade, and I worked hard to get them to think about their future. What are you going to do? Pretty much kind of almost what you would think would be a parent outlook. And, you know, there's a quote, George Washington Carver, that I had in our hallway, without hope there is no vision. So I really appreciate what you're saying. I think it's a critical part of that ecosystem, and I would like to add parts back to that educational ecosystem like this. I think it's critical. So just thank you for the presentation.
Thank you. Co-Chair Story.
Thank you. We do have another slide, or maybe you just didn't talk about this slide, but you talk about the Career Guides report down there.
Yes, great.
It would be great if we could have a copy of that. But I also, aren't we in the second year of a partnership with the Department of Labor on the career guides being placed in regional hubs, so to speak?
Yes, that both are true. And you do have some copies of that career guide report that digs into that a little bit more. Some of the, this was drafted a year and a half ago, but I think a lot of the findings hold true, correct? Yep. Is that the report that you were thinking of?
I'm not sure. Through the chair, I just saw it in there. But I, it would be great if we could just notice where they could get a copy of this, because obviously we can't post this on BASIS. But if there are copies available, it would be good to know where they could find them.
And I wanted to also mention something that Mount Edgecombe High School has done for a long time is a post-secondary plan. I'm going to be speaking out of turn if I say it's a graduation requirement, but it may be. And the idea is that you cross the finish line, you get to May, you graduate, you've finished high school, and like my colleague from Anchorage was saying, you haven't necessarily thought about what comes next. If you're an Edgecombe student, you have three things ready to go, which might have included applying to AvTech or applying to different scholarships or whatever. And so you then in June or July, you're like, okay, now what's next? And you can go to this plan that you made, and you're ready to go. Mm-hmm. So, you know, some kids are working towards it, and that's what their eye is on, and some kids kind of just need to get across the stage at graduation. So that's been a really powerful thing that they've done, and this seems to be aligned with that. So Any last questions, Representative Elam?
Thank you. Thanks for the presentation. It's very interesting information. Going back kind of throughout the slide, the theme of basically not having to be so tough to, like, be successful or to be able to get some engagement. It's just a very interesting conversation. We've had that conversation quite a few times on the Kenai because there's a lot of people who just really don't want to have to leave. There's a lot of people who do want to leave. I think that we need to have those opportunities where people are able to do and be successful, engaged where we're at. Avtech is in my district or just outside of my district, but then also like our school system on the Kenai has done a pretty good job at getting CTE. We've got pretty good partnerships with the colleges. Outside of those, have you guys got any recommendations on things that we can do in addition to kind of gain that traction and engagement, or is there stuff that we're missing that we're not seeing?
Through the chair, thank you so much for this question. I'll share a few reflections. I mentioned being at UAF, and there's in the engineering department, which is what my son is interested in, they have a 10-to-1 student to faculty ratio. It's like, that's amazing. And I said to my son, like, wow, imagine if we had that ratio for like our kindergartners. And he said, yeah, it's kind of like the Hunger Games getting through kindergarten. So I think we could make our schools a little less like the Hunger Games, so more students are experiencing success throughout. But also in addition to the career guides and that real life exposure through career and tech ed programs and so forth, you know, students not only have to know something is possible, but they have to experience it and believe that it's possible. Another key strategy is giving bite-sized opportunities to leave your home community and connect with new people. It is a skill that is really difficult for our young people, whether it's as a result of COVID or our small communities. You know, some of our kiddos have never met someone that didn't know them since they were born, right? And so how do you make a new relationship? And that's a key, you know, to succeed in a 2 or 4 year degree program. But programs like Bristol Bay Region CTE that allow students to come together for a two-week period of time and build those connections, they're growing that skill as well, in addition to the career exposure. And then another one of my favorite ones is more information and support for families to be part of this process. To expect students to navigate it on their own is unrealistic. And it doesn't play on our strength. One of our strengths is that we are community-oriented and family-oriented, and that's also a motivating factor for a lot of students. So connecting those families into these conversations.
And I was just going to say, would you call something like BBRCTE, would you call that a bridge program?
A bridge program. It's also a way of offering career and tech ed courses that fill credits for that high school degree program and builds towards certification.
I think I've been thinking of it as a CTE opportunity, when in fact there are some components of what a bridge program has, where kids are making those relationships, maybe figuring out how to do their laundry. Yeah. So anyway, okay. Anything else, Representative Elam? Yeah.
Some of the CTE programs that they've got come out with like professional level certifications.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Huge. Okay. I think we'll wrap up there, and that leaves Lon 17 minutes. We realized that an overview of the Association of Alaska School Boards could be really helpful. We've been hearing from Lon talking from the school board perspective all session, and wanted to just make a little bit of a pause to kind of go back and have you tell us about the organization. So thank you for being here. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. And for the record again, my name is Lon Garrison. I'm the executive director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. And it's going to be hard to follow up on that performance by Emily. So We are so blessed.
Can I interrupt for a second,
yes.
Lon? I just want to point out the reports that we have in front of us in hard copy are on BASIS as well. So anybody who's watching or has watched the presentation could get these on BASIS. Apologies, but
no,
I just want to make
no
sure
worries.
We had that out there.
Great.
Okay.
And like I said, it'll probably be pretty hard to follow up on Emily's performance and giving you that kind of information. But I think it is a great demonstration of the work that the Association of Alaska School Boards does, our ability to come together and work with a variety of partners across the state on a variety of issues that affect public education across the state is incredibly rich. So with that, I'll try to go through this rather quickly to give you an overview of who AASB is. So AASB is, we are an organization that is driven by our membership, and our membership consists of 53 of the, we call it 50, it actually is 53 of the 54 school districts if you include Mount Edgecombe as a district. So we kind of fudge on that.
But isn't Tanana gone? So it's actually
Tanana is now gone, yeah, so we need to update that. And we have recently added Aleutian Region as a new member of the association, which we have not had in quite some time. And unfortunately, the only district that we don't have within our membership right now is the Matsu Borough School District, which is absolutely fine. We love to work with them whenever we can, but that's the one district that doesn't participate in the association. So we were founded in 1954. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization representing all school boards in Alaska. And that includes over 330 school board members. And we like to include the superintendents as part of the leadership team, although the superintendents are represented by their own association, the Alaska Association of Superintendents, and I think you'll be hearing from my good friend and colleague, Dr. Lisa Parody, about that. We currently are comprised of about 27 individuals that work for us in a variety of sectors. And that is the board development, board development services, and also what we call our conditions for learning. We are governed by a 15-member board of directors that's elected by the membership each fall. We have a rotation of five of those directors that come up for election every year, and we meet in November in Anchorage at our annual conference. We also at our annual conference hold what's called a delegate assembly, and at that delegate assembly, that is where we conduct the business of the membership, and the membership comes together to determine what they want to say about issues facing public education. So there's a resolutions process, resolutions and beliefs, and those resolutions and belief statements can be found on our aasb.org website. And those are the statements that help guide me in the work that I do and the advocacy work that I do on behalf of the membership with you, the legislature. So one of the things that we take into account as we think about where does AASB fit in the paradigm of supporting K-12 education, as you just heard, one of those was presented by Emily Ferry, and our support for something that we call the conditions for learning. In terms of what we have normally called our core services, where we focus on governance and leadership, that certainly is something that we have done from day one, and that was really the origins of the organization back in 1954, to support and help educate school board members in understanding what their role is in governance and how they go about doing that, and to support the idea of how important and how relevant local governance is versus state or federal mandates regarding education and governance. So conditions for learning includes a number of things that we have engaged in. It started with some grant programs about a decade and a half ago that were funded by the federal government. money that was received by the association through grant funds that Senator Ted Stevens was able to get for us. And that began what we call the Initiative for Community Engagement, and that has now evolved into what we call the Conditions for Learning, the CFL team. I have included as a separate sheet a list of all the grant current federal and state grant programs that we are implementing across the state and what each one of those does. So you'll see that we have quite a number of federal grants that we're working on that do various different things with school districts and students and parents and communities. So it's not just staff and students based. It's really an opportunity to try to engage families and community members in public education in a meaningful way. And I think Emily's presentation was a great example of that kind of work and the work that we do with a number of partners across the state. And then, of course, there's the other portion, which is the instructional core. And I think that is the piece that you're going to hear from Dr. Parody about, their function in helping to support administration, teachers, those kinds of things, and the work that they do as an association. Next up, we have our Partnership for School Improvement and Student Achievement. And this is the piece where I want to talk about the way we work with various organizations around the state. That includes the department, DEED, our governance work, our work with ACSA, and our ability to pair up and try to support the school system as best we can. The University of Alaska, working with the University of Alaska, trying to prepare students getting ready to go to the university system, but also working with other organizations such as ICER to provide information and data so policymakers can understand better some of the things that are going on in regard to K-12 education and decisions that need to be made. And then one of the other organizations that we work closely with is CERC, which provides operational support services. So there's a number of maybe what you would want to call the traditional organizations that we work with. What I hadn't lined out here in this particular slideshow were other partners, other nonprofit partners and organizations that we have worked closely with and are working more closely with today through the Conditions for Learning. Some of those would include Sea Alaska Heritage, for instance. There may be a partner. They are partners in a couple of the grant programs that we work with, Tlingit and Haida, the Alaska Humanities Forum, a number of other nonprofit organizations that we also work with closely. Just to take a step back and go back to our government focus, these are some of the things that we like to, that are part of the program that we offer school boards and school districts in terms of governance. And I know Representative Schwanke has been to a number of our conferences and has participated in that. And so to understand what, you know, the board's role in doing a number of things. I will mention that I made a mistake and sit in the wrong slideshow for you, so you may have gotten an opportunity to see some board development, which was the board and the budget. And so those are some – so maybe that was fortuitous if you got to see that, and I'm happy to share it. But, you know, what's the role of the board in determining and approving in the process of the budget? So those are some of the basics that we work with. We have board-aligned services, which include our legislative advocacy. We have advisory school board training, superintendent searches, support for data-informed decision-making. We offer a great survey called the School Connected and School Climate and Connectedness Survey, which has been running for quite some time, I think probably close to 12 or 15 years now. And that is a survey that we use for evaluation of many of the federal grant programs that we're monitoring. Superintendent evaluations and accountability, board self-evaluation, equally as important, orientation for new board members and training, and then one of the bigger ones that we also offer is model policy for school boards. We offer boardsmanship academies that happen throughout the year, one in the fall, winter, spring, and then the annual conference in November. And there's a list of some of the topics we include in our curriculum of training. Our annual conference is always held in Anchorage each November, early November, and you certainly are always welcome to attend. We'd love to have legislators come and attend the conference with us, so you have an open invitation. It's the largest gathering of school board members in the state. We have programs that feature renowned speakers and educational experts. We really try to focus on, in terms of keynote speakers, a keynote speaker that is from Alaska and is dealing with Alaska public education, and then maybe somebody from the outside that is going to be speaking on a topic that we might be involved with in terms of all the work that we do. There's educational and governance sectionals, and then, as I mentioned, we have a delegate assembly. Conditions for learning, here's a list of many of the things that they do as well. And unfortunately, that could be a whole section in and of itself, all of the development of the projects and programs that Conditions of Learning is involved with and has been involved with over the years, and we'd be happy to talk to that at another time. The Conditions for Learning is primarily a grant-funded operation, and so those grants come from the U.S. Department of Education. This slide is a little bit out of date. We have more than five grants, I believe. Alaska DEED, we've done work with Professional Boundaries, which talks about trying to prevent sexual abuse of minors, especially in the school system. And then there's private funders that we also work with, like the Robert Wood Johnson and Carnegie Foundation. Some of the aligned services with that are trauma-engaged schools and family partnerships, and then, as I mentioned, the school climate and connectedness work that supports surveying and monitoring the conditions for learning. And one of the things that I really would like to point out is our work with youth leadership, both statewide and regionally. We include youth leadership as part of our annual conference in November. There's called the Youth Leadership Institute. And then, as you might remember from our fly-in in February, we also do the Youth Advocacy Institute to bring youth to Juneau to understand advocacy.
If we could pause for just a second. Co-Chair Story?
Yes, through the chair to Mr. Garrison. I know the School Climate and Connectedness Survey well, and I know from other states that they really have looked at this as just really a model for school board members and their staff, the principals, the teachers, to find out how their school is doing for school climate and connectedness. And I just wanted to pause a little bit, and you could maybe explain more than I'm going to, but it's the kids and the, I can't remember what age groups that they take the climate and connectedness, so you could help me. But it has things like, do you feel safe here at your school? And I might be remembering this wrong from before. And they, I don't know if it's a 1 to 5 or whatever. But they have some certain questions like that. And then the school staff takes that and says, is there anything in here that's alarming to us or concerning and we need to focus on creating more belongingness in our school? Or if they're bullying, do you feel bullied here? And, you know, things like that. So maybe you could explain a little bit more about
Sure. What
I'm trying to remember.
Absolutely. The School Climate and Connectedness Survey is administered to, we have one for elementary students, we have one for middle high school students. Then there is a survey that is also available for parents, obviously for staff, and I believe we also have one now for communities as well. So I'll have to check with Emily. She's probably a better expert on the use of those surveys at this point and what we have available. But they are incredibly incredibly compelling when you begin to look at the data. They're presented through a program that's supported called Panorama. And the ability for staff, for school board members, for communities, for parents to kind of dig into the data and understand what the climate and connectedness is of students, of parents, of staff to their school is incredibly powerful, and it really does facilitate the opportunity to drive discussions and programs that can promote growth. And it's something that we've worked hard on for many years. And it is, you know, it's not something that is just done kind of willy-nilly. There's science behind it. It was originally developed by the American Institute of Research. And so they are the ones that we have worked with over the years to create that survey. And so it is used as an important evaluation tool in the work that we do. And we'd be happy to provide more information on that survey.
Quick follow-up? Oh, sorry. Yeah, I just wanted to give an example. When I was liaison to the school board, site councils, when I was on the local school board, it was great for me to see the parent groups taking that survey and saying, hey, our kids don't feel like they belong here. And then the local parents are figuring out, how can we create more belonging in our school? And it really gave them some cool initiatives to work on. So thank you for that work. Yep. And the leadership on that.
And doing a quick time check, if we could move through the next few slides.
I think we're almost there. So, yeah. So other associated support, things that we also do, you know, we work in partnership with others to help with supporting instruction, comprehensive district technology support that we have done in the past and continue to do through our association with Lynx Alaska. Professional development that addresses, you know, district goals and strategic planning is a big part of what we do. Professional development for school systems and DEED staff regarding governance and our conditions for learning. So working with those. And then professional support for other things like executive administrative assistance. They don't have a professional group, so we offer that. We actually have a two-day workshop that we bring executive admins from school districts together, and they can work through things. And the other piece that we have done now for about a dozen years is we put on a school maintenance employee conference, and we bring maintenance officials and employees into Anchorage for, it's almost a 2.5-day workshop now with opportunity for training after that we work in concert with the Alaska school business officials in the Good School Maintenance Program. So trying to figure out ways that we can support districts as best as possible. And here's some information. You can find this on the web about the work that we do and a couple of the pieces that we were talking about in the School Climate and Connectedness Survey link. There's our contact information, and happy to answer any questions. I know that was really fast, and I apologize for the mix-up on the presentations, but now you also get to know what the boards need to go through. I'm sure Representative Underwood remembers that piece fondly when it comes to budgeting.
Right, yeah, not easy. Okay, any last really quick questions, Representative Eichheit?
Thank you, Chair Hemshute. Briefly, the question is about the MATSU. Of course, I could ask my colleague to my left, but just curious, has the MATSU School Board been a member in the past? In your long history, and if they were, when did they leave, and briefly, why did they leave, if you're so compelled?
Sure, and certainly, Representative Underwood may be able to give you some current information, but MATSU was a longtime member of the association, and so we were sad to see them go. They left the association in 2017, I believe. And I think it's really a difference of perspective in terms of what our organization does and what it stands for, and at the time, what the board felt aligned with its particular perspectives and goals. And so I would hope that at some point in time, they would be so inclined to join us again. We're completely nonpartisan, and it is a membership-driven organization. And so having all perspectives and voices in the room, to me, is critically important. And it doesn't matter if you agree with them or not. It's important to have those conversations and those perspectives come to the table so that we better understand what each of our local districts face in terms of the governance pieces that they need to, that they're encountering in, propagating and completing public education in their district. So we'd love to have them come back or have a conversation about the opportunity to see Matsu as a member of our organization.
And then within each board, you have members who are be across the the range, I would hope. So, okay, we're going to move on. And just so that the committee has an idea of where we're headed, our next presentation is going to be around ACSA, which, again, we've been hearing from them quite a bit. But just as a point of reference, Dr. Parody is going to spend about 10 minutes with us talking about the organization overall. And then Jennifer Schmitz will help us with the ARC, and Kelly Manning is here in the room. So Jennifer's going to be looking at about 15 minutes, and Kelly, you know, 10 to 30 minutes, whatever time we have left. So sorry, I should be using, I think you're Director Manning, Deputy Director Manning. Okay, anyway, I should be using the right terminology. I apologize. So Dr. Parody, if you'd come forward and help us learn more about your organization, just an overview, and we've been hearing from you, but what all do you guys do beyond the conversations we've already been having?
Madam Chairman, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, thank you for inviting me to share with you some of what we do beyond give you input on education policy-related legislation. That's where you usually see us, but it's the smallest portion of my job, if that makes sense. And I think it's nice to share with you some of the other things our organization does. You heard, actually, from my colleague, Mr. Garrison, a lot of the focus areas and the ways in which we partner. And we, too, partner with everyone across the state related to education. One partner that we've worked closely with is Alaska Municipal League lately, Nils Andreasen, because we have a lot of overlap areas of concern, major maintenance, those kinds of things. So we really, like AASB, like to be solution-driven. We are member-driven as well. And we are also nonpartisan. And it's an interesting place that we're in education. And I really want to talk more about, we were invited to talk about ARC. I want to share a little bit about why we decided to add a new division to ACSA. Right now, I think I didn't put myself on the record. For the record, my name is Lisa Parody, Executive Director of ACSA.
Good.
And it's truly my pleasure to work with such an outstanding staff. We have statewide staff ranging from Palmer to Fairbanks to Anchorage to Juneau. We are also a 50-plus-year-old private nonprofit, and we have several divisions, one of which I think you heard a little bit about. We do grant writing with and for school districts, often focused on specific student activities, all of them focused on increasing student achievement for those districts. And one of the things that we found is that so many districts don't have the capacity to write grants, and so we do that function for them, or with them, I would say, and then provide that support in grant management as those pieces are implemented. We also, for example, do the most computer science instruction in the state. A couple of years ago, Commissioner Johnson, the previous Department of Education Early Development Commissioner, called me from a conference he was at and said, you know what, we need to be doing computer science. We're not doing computer science the way we need to. Would you do it? Which is often I got calls like that from him. And what we did is partner with the State Department and brought code.org in. And code.org is focused on computational thinking and computational, I think, science, part of which is hooking students by teaching coding, but it's actually really designed to teach teachers how to teach computer science. And so we are the organization doing that in Alaska. And it's grown, to be a huge part of our work. And I'm just sharing that as an example because I don't have time to walk through all the things we do. But when we see a need, we try to support it in the whatever way possible to help our members and our districts and ultimately our students. And one of the best ways that we do that, and I included it in your handouts, is through our Alaska Staff Development Network. And so I included our catalog for you. And essentially, ACSA provides through ASDN, the Alaska Staff Development Network, the greatest amount of professional development for all educators, including teachers in Alaska. And you can kind of look through here and see the kinds of things we do. The majority of our work is no cost to our educators to participate. We do host the largest conference in Alaska every year. It's our MTSS Effective Instruction Conference, and we have around 1,300 educators come. And I think I shared before, we feel like because districts are no longer able to travel, they don't have the funds to travel, we bring the best in so that they can still avail themselves of the highest quality professional development available. And our students deserve that. This year, we added pre-conferences for educator retention and recruitment, as well as always having a small and rural day to support the specific issues that they deal with that maybe some of our larger districts don't. I won't walk you through this, but I encourage you to take a look at it, and also want to invite you, if you're ever interested in participating in any of the things in here, just let me know. We'd love to have you share in some of the good work that's happening.
And this is also on BASIS, if anyone watching wanted to take a closer look at it. So thank you, Dr. Parody.
Thank you. This slide, I share it a lot because I think it's so important. You know, we represent all districts, including the MATSU, I'll say. In fact, the superintendent in the MATSU is our incoming president-elect and does a fabulous job. But all superintendents, elementary and secondary principals, school business officials, and education leaders in public schools, including neighborhood charter and correspondents across Alaska. And for them, you know, we host all their events, their professional development, their conferences. So that's a huge piece, too, is allowing for them to be able to support each other through networking. And I would say the majority of those kinds of convenings are online, certainly like through Zoom or other ways. And I think this slide in particular should resonate with you. I mean, you represent all of these students. Yeah, I really impressed on probably members. Like, you might be from Bristol Bay or Tanana or Fairbanks, but at the end of the day, we're responsible to every child and to make sure that each child gets the kind of education that they deserve, that their families want them to get. And we take that real seriously. You've heard about our joint position statements 100 times, so I will only say that this is a work product that all our members come together around and highlight the highest priorities in education today. So it takes a lot of work to bring it together, but I think it does include what our districts are wrestling with as well as federal issues. So this slide, I won't read to you, but preparing, attracting, and retaining qualified educators is such a huge issue, and you know, it's been increasing over time, and now we're just at a crisis point. And so, I know we've shared this slide before, you know, with the educator vacancies in Alaska on the first day being at 600, I think that's a 20% increase from the year before. And I just want to share a little bit because we are the product, or we're responding to a national education crisis. And ours tends to be a little bit worse because we've been so historically reliant on recruiting from the 48, lower 48, and right now they're struggling to recruit. So it kind of makes our pools that much smaller. And just a little bit about that. The state of the teaching profession is at or near a 50-year low across every major metric. So public respect, student interest, teacher preparation, and job satisfaction. And this is from a 2024-25 study on from the National Bureau of Economic Research. And it says that interest in teaching has collapsed among young people. And since the 1990s, interest in teaching among college freshmen has dropped nearly 50%, and among high school seniors by 40%, reaching historic lows. Only about 5% of college freshmen today expressed interest in teaching, down from 20% in the 70s. Over 100,000 fewer people earned teaching licenses in 2021 than in 2006. Which is significant. The percentage of college grads going into teaching is the lowest it has been in 50 years. And I'll just hit on one more of those focus areas, which is that job satisfaction is at a record low. Only 12% of teachers say they were very satisfied with their job in 2022. That's the lowest rate in 5 decades. Burnout, declining respect, political interference, and stagnant wages have all contributed to that drop. And even though the pandemic did make things worse, we all know that, the downward trend started well before 2020. This is a structural issue, not just situational. And so I want to just share that very current research. I'm going to tell you 5 things that I think are impacting this. Worsening teacher attrition and pipeline challenges because of the fewer college students entering teacher prep programs. It's really, I think, here shrunk our pipeline. And I'm really supportive to the our organization works closely with the University of Alaska. We're very supportive to them. We think that the graduates in these programs coming out are prepared, well qualified, and Anchorage could employ every single one of them. From the minute they graduate, and we'd still have a huge gap. And so I think continuing to support them in their efforts to grow this area is really important. I think the profession has increasing demands combined with low compensation and the lack of support. And one thing that Alaska really deals with is our regional and subject area disparities. So our rural and high poverty districts often struggle the most to recruit and retain staff. And we have chronic shortages in special education, in our STEM areas, bilingual education, and career technical education. And so those are really hard to fill positions. I'm very pleased to say that the state special ed organization has recently joined our organization because they're so concerned about the state of special education, and so they'll become part of the ACSA family soon, and hopefully we can help them to highlight some of the things that they're most struggling with. But here's the real point, right? All these disparities exacerbate existing inequities in our student learning outcomes, and I think each of you and our organization are really trying to focus on that. And the rest of these are really impacts on student learning, and we have to address those. So I'm going to move ahead because I know we're short on time. I have much, much more, but I do want to say, I think this data that you received from Dr. Dana DeFeo, our teacher salaries adjusted for cost of living being 25% below is another huge issue for us. And before I turn it over to Kelly Manning, we are focused on solutions in our organization. We run all of the pipeline programs for our members, and so we do a early career principal pipeline called the Alaska School Leadership Academy. We do that in partnership with the Department of Education and Early Development. It is a partnership that we've been doing for several years. It is making a difference. We are better able to retain our principals because we wrap services, mentorship, professional development around those early career principals. We also run the new and incoming superintendent cohorts, and that's a 2-year program. And what we're finding now is those new superintendents are choosing to stay in the program for 3 and 4 years because they're getting the kinds of supports through the mentorship, through the professional development that we're trying to provide. And I just share those with you. There are so many other programs that we are operating in support of our members, but we want to be solution focused, and when we see opportunities to do that, we jump at it, which brings me to our next piece, and that
is... Dr. Parody, if I could jump in for just a second here. I'm not exactly sure who's presenting what, but I know that Co-Chair Story had a question, and so does Representative Dibert. So if we could pause for just a second.
Of course.
Thank you. Through the chair, welcome, Dr. Parody. I had asked Deed a couple weeks ago about the vacancy rates, the 600, and about how many were special ed and how many were classroom, and I have not heard back yet. I was wondering if you had any idea of how many are special ed.
Through the chair, Representative Story, I do have some idea, but I don't have it in front of me, but I can provide that to you. And then Deputy Manning probably can speak to that as well, and she follows me. But really important questions, because it's not just it's those chronic areas, and I think knowing those will make a big difference for us. So we're going to be digging into that more as special ed joins us. Thank you for the great question, and we'll get back to you on that.
Okay, Representative Dibert.
Yes, thank you through the chair to Dr. Parody. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here and sharing this important information. We know it's a fact that our state is the only state in the nation that doesn't have some form of defined benefit. And I know we're going into this next slideshow regarding that. But my question is, do you think that if we adopt a modest defined benefit program, that this will help recruit and keep teachers here in Alaska longer than 3 to 5 years? Thank you so much, the chair.
Through the chair, Representative Dibert, my opinion is yes. I think some kind of benefit is better than none. And what we're seeing is that it is impacting our ability to recruit and retain folks. This year, I'm devastated by the number of high-quality professionals in the administrative realm, primarily principals, but also superintendents, and then teachers. Their teachers are leaving for this reason. And, you know, I've had folks say, well, you know, the younger generation doesn't care about retirement and things like that. And the truth is they do. Robust benefit packages contribute to job satisfaction and long-term retention. And the research is very clear on that. So my answer is yes.
And I had a follow-up question as well. I've been hearing a lot about all these teachers in admin, certified teachers in admin. Can you speak to that? Like, in my experience as an educator, that was one pathway as an educator if you wanted to not be in the classroom but still in a school. And it's not about not being in the classroom. It's about how can I do more? What's my next step as an educator? And it's fairly limited. Most of us are pretty darn thrilled with being in the classroom, and that's the leadership we want. Some people want to grow in their profession and do more. So then they become a principal, or then they become a superintendent, or then they become a curriculum director. And so those certified people in administration, that's the pathway. We wouldn't want a curriculum director who hasn't been in the classroom, is my experience. But, well, not that we had curriculum directors in my school, we were too small, but it would have been great to have one. So I just, is there something I'm missing when people talk about certified people in administration?
Madam Chairman, I don't know that you're missing anything. I think we've found that offering pathways for advancement internally is a very effective way to grow our future leadership across all areas. And right now, every area in Alaska is struggling from lack of pools, if you will. And so it is the best way to grow our own from within. And I often speak with our members about look inside your organization. Who is an amazing teacher that you may want to support to become a principal or name it, curriculum director? We have mentoring roles, throughout our organization at every level. We also run aspiring programs, so aspiring principals, aspiring superintendents, aspiring district office. We run an HR cohort. We run a curriculum cohort. We run multiple cohorts to do what you're saying, which is to help to grow these education leaders into these important roles. And what we're finding is that there's a lot of interest in that, but because of the other factors that we've been talking about all session, a lot of times we lose those individuals once they are trained or they go through a program to become a principal. They often will leave. And so, but we're still going to do it. We're going to, growing our own is very critical. And one of the areas we've been focused on, too, is, like LKSD is a great example of working to support local growing our paraprofessionals, our local individuals to become teachers. And I think at one point they had 17% Alaska Native education professionals in the district. And I think it's a great model for our state because I know from my experience on the North Slope, our incredibly dedicated folks from our communities were the ones who the students grew up with and knew and trusted and respected. And the more we can do to support them to become those experts, those teachers, the better that's going to support our students. But also, I think, in terms of helping retention, it will make a difference. So I think you're not missing anything. I think it is a critical path. I do worry that we get people right to the point where we can hire them, and many of them choose to leave. So that's unfortunate. I would just close by saying we were asked to, and we did put in an RFP. There was an RFP, and we submitted to become the recruitment and retention hub for Alaska, and it was a logical fit because we're already doing so much as an organization to focus on those areas, and so we are working in close partnership with the Department of Education and Early Development on the strategies that the governor's task force outlined in the working group that focused on teacher recruitment and retention for a couple of years. That work was led by Dr. Barbara Adams. Deputy Manning is going to speak to you more specifically about it. There are a plethora of strategies in that book, in that playbook. And I think the point I want to leave you with is that we're not going to have a silver bullet here. We're not going to say we have a retirement system and a BSA and we're good. We're going to have to do so many things. We've got to do all the strategies to support our kids. They have to all come together, and we need to harness everything in this direction. There is no silver bullet, and we're just at that point. We're not alone, but we're probably the worst off, if that makes sense. So I appreciate all of you. I know this is really hard work, but I know you're such thoughtful people, and we appreciate the opportunity to work with you. And I think this most recent decision by our board to become the Alaska Educator Retention and Recruitment Center is an effort to continue the great work that was outlined not only in the playbook but in other areas that we see developing in terms of solutions around retention and recruitment. And we're very open to ideas because often with ACSA, we hear good things, we learn good things, and we just do them. So if you have ideas and suggestions on additional ways that we can support our students in this way, please let us know. So thank you for the opportunity. I could go on
question.
And on also.
I'm not sure what's happening next because we do have Jennifer Schmitz online, and then we have Deputy Director Manning in the room. Are they both presenting, or what's happening next? And we have about 21 minutes.
I think, Madam Chair, Deputy Manning is going to present next, just a little bit about the TRR playbook and some of those suggestions. We did give that to you in a PDF form. It's huge. And then we'll close with Jennifer Schmitz, who's the director of ARC, the Alaska Educator Retention Recruitment.
Okay, so I'll save about 5 minutes for Jennifer Schmitz at the end. Okay, Deputy Director Manning, if you could come and put your name on record and take it from here.
Good morning. For the record, I am Kelly Manning, Deputy Director for the Division of Innovation and Education Excellence, and I was asked to share a little bit of the TRR playbook to help ground some of the ARC work. So some of the slides that I have are a little duplicative of some of Dr. Parity's, so I'll move through some of those a little bit more quickly. But the teacher retention and recruitment playbook is grounded in the acute need for teachers in Alaska. And as Dr. Parity noted, this is a nationwide challenge. So this slide here represents the Economic Policy Institute data on national teacher shortages. And you can see that the projected demand is going up and the projected supply is going down. And so this is really the national picture of what this looks like. And as Dr. Parity noted, for Alaska, it's more acute than really at the national level. So these conversations are happening nationally around how do we recruit and retain educators. And for Alaska, we've been having this conversation for a number of years because we have been in this space with a high number of vacancies and high turnover rates for a while. So this slide here represents data from the Regional Education Lab Northwest study that we are working to update, but the last data that we show indicates a teacher turnover rate for Alaska of 22% and a principal turnover rate of 18%. And this slide, I know that I think we've shared this a couple of times with you, but helps to demonstrate what that looks like when you break that out for our different types of communities. So around our state, we have different and more acute turnover when you look at our more rural hub and rural remote. And one of the things that's really important to note here is how significant that difference is for principals from our urban districts to our rural remote, where you have a significantly higher percentage of turnover in our principals in our rural remote districts.
Deputy Director Manning, just a quick question. I don't know, on slide 10, the number has been holding around 20% and has spiked up to 24% at times for teacher turnover. And, of course, the principal turnover is abysmally higher. But this is all the way back to 2012. Prior to 2012, was our turnover any lower than that? Do you know? Like, is there something that has changed to make the turnover higher? Or is this just Alaska's fate that we're going to turn over 20% of our educators?
Co-chair Himshoot, you know, I don't have the data from prior to 2012 handy, but I think that where we're at right now is one of the things that Dr. Parity noted is we've had high turnover rates in Alaska, but because the turnover is getting more acute nationally, it's that much harder for us to recruit. And I think, too, that we've tended to have high turnover rates in part because we have a lot of mobility between our rural districts to urban districts, and that's always been a bit of the picture for Alaska. However, with the turnover rates and the challenges with recruiting teachers to Alaska, I think some of those turnover, the impacts of that are a little bit more acute with people coming from out of state, not being able to fill some of those vacancies as teachers turn over from those more rural remote districts to more urban districts.
On this slide, even though it looks like we're fairly stable at 20 to 25% turnover, what the slide doesn't capture is that we can't fill the positions. So turnover is one thing. Turnover with unfilled positions is a whole different battle. Okay, correct. Thank you.
And I think that's where this slide, I think, is helpful to see where you have that more acute turnover in our most rural remote districts. And even when a teacher moves within Alaska, it still means that that school is facing that turnover. So having a school or a district have teachers move still means that that school has to go through that, the recruitment, the getting that educator into the community, engaging with the families and students and building those relationships. So even when they stay within Alaska, it still leads to that turnover and that impact on those communities. This has already been shared, but our first-day vacancy rate, has been spiking significantly in the last 4 years. So this is an area that, we really see that acute increase in turnover impacting our district. So though this is on that first day, and some of these may be filled after the fact with emergency certificates or long-term substitutes or different people that are able to fill some of those classrooms, that disruption for schools when they don't have that teacher on the first day is pretty significant. So
co-chair story.
Thank you. And I think through the chair, Deputy Director Manning, great to see you. It would be helpful when we get the statistics of how many are in special ed. It would also be nice to know how many are emergency certifications of the ones that do get filled. I think it just gives us a really clear picture of what we're experiencing.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And Representative Elam.
Thank you. Excuse me. So that gap between 2021 and 2025 is just over double. Do we know what the total number of employees for 2021 versus, say, 2025 was? Because if the headcount numbers have either lowered or increased, the percentages of vacancy would be higher or lower based off of where that's at. So do we know kind of what the percentages would be, say, if we were at 2021 versus at 2025?
Through the chair to Representative Elam, you've actually asked that question, I believe, and I know that we've provided it in follow-up, but I don't have it in front of me today.
Sorry.
So, no, that's all right. I will I'll make sure that we resend that so that it's
I probably have it over there.
I was just, and you've asked it, so I should have had it.
Thank you.
Representative Eichheit.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a very direct question. Looking at this graph, I noted what Representative Elam had seen. So I guess just the pointed question, how does the information in this graph with certified position vacancy rates, how does that affect student achievement?
Through the chair to Representative Eichheit, student achievement is our ultimate goal with the teacher retention recruitment work, recognizing that teacher turnover, teacher vacancies, all of those things are disruptions in the classroom. And so that is part of the reason that this is one of our priority areas for the department and really supporting our districts and partners in addressing teacher turnover, because we recognize that impacts student performance.
Follow up. Briefly, I didn't hear a hard number, and I understand there may not be some hard numbers, but I would argue this is key, having a highly qualified teacher in front of students, and, this just breaks my heart. I think it does everybody, so thank you.
I'll always go back to, I don't want to keep beating a horse that is very much not dead. But funding would help the situation, would it not? Okay, let's continue.
And Schwanke has a question.
Oh, apologies. Representative Schwanke.
Thank you, Chair Hampshire. Just kind of a quick question on the previous slide there. I just had a noting on the urban numbers on the bottom there. Does turnover account for a teacher leaving one job or position in a school and going to another school within the same district? How does that work?
Through the chair to Representative Schwanke, yes, teacher turnover rates are reflected at the school level.
The school level, okay.
So I want to make sure I'm understanding that right. So if a teacher goes from second grade to fifth grade in the same school, is that considered turnover?
To Chair Hemshute, no, I don't believe that would be reflected in turnover.
And if a teacher, we have a K-8 certificate, if a teacher goes from fifth grade to seventh grade, is that turnover?
To Co-Chair Hemshute, I will have to look at how it was conducted for the the REL Northwest study specifically to get that minutia.
Sounds good, because that is disruptive to students more than a second to fifth grade shift.
Correct.
So, okay, thank you. Does that satisfy? Okay, great. I think we can go on.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. Those are great questions that I think help to, you know, it lays the foundation for why the teacher retention and recruitment playbook was developed. So recognizing all of the acute turnover, the governor had developed the teacher retention recruitment work group, and that working group had worked over a series of years, really bringing together stakeholders, districts, partner organizations, many, many voices from communities around the state to participate in the development of the playbook, which was released in August of 2023. Barbara Adams of Adams Analytics, she really led that initiative for the state, bringing together those groups and identifying 16 recommendations and implementation strategies that could help affect our outcomes for teacher retention and recruitment. And one of the things, because of, you know, we have already talked about the difficulty of recruitment, the reason that the playbook and the ARC have retention first is if we can address retention, then our recruitment needs go down. So so the highlights, it does talk about recruitment, but retention is really our first goal with the teacher retention recruitment playbook. And this notes that the next step is that stakeholder engagement. So really making sure that the many groups that can make an impact, as Dr. Parity shared when she was presenting, there's not one silver bullet, one thing that's going to fix it. And so this, where we're at now, is really that call to action and making sure that appropriate stakeholders that can move the needle in different areas of the playbook are aware of the strategies and understand how they can help impact our teacher retention recruitment.
And for the committee's awareness, we have about 10 minutes.
Okay, I'll move quickly. I have just two slides. So so in the strategies, there are 16 laid out, and they really fall within these six buckets. And I'm actually going to go to this slide because it does help to kind of break out some of those. So some of the things that have come up today around restructuring retirement, around creating pathways for leadership. These are strategies laid out in the TRR recommendations. One of the areas of need is really to have a central hub or a place where you can help all of the potential stakeholders to understand the ways that they can help to impact change in retention and recruitment. And that's why the department had put out an RFP to recruit an organization to help lift that work and participate in engaging those stakeholders, bringing together steering committee, bringing together the different sectors, because it's not just an education. When you look through the different recommendations, it's not just the education organizations that can impact change in these areas. And so some things around like strengthening working conditions really require our community organizations, for example. And so that's the intent of the hub. And so that's why we did the work to bring on the ARC, the Alaska Educator Retention Recruitment Center, to help with bringing together those stakeholders and understanding the pieces that they can help pick up and move forward. So those are the slides that I had to share.
Very briefly, before we run into that, on slide 15, when we look at these recommendations, is there a suite of legislative solutions here? So is there like a package that we could be looking at that would help from a statutory standpoint? Director or Dr. Parity?
Madam Chair. Yes, we are currently creating an omnibus bill through one of your colleagues, and I know many of you would love to be involved with that, but it is specifically from the recommendations, the policy recommendations that came forward from this working group, and many of them are certification changes in the statute, or, you know, they're things that aren't necessarily fiscal, but are policy decisions that could assist us with recruitment and primarily retention. So we're going to be introducing that, or this individual will be introducing that very soon, and we hope to share it with you as soon as that's done.
House Bill 230 came from the TRR playbook, so and that was to take the state's restriction off of how many years of experience you could bring in. So, Representative Eichheit, did you have a question?
Just briefly, a comment. I notice on this slide you have restructuring retirement options as a bucket, and I just want to point out you had financial education, and I think what's important about that is we've talked about financial literacy for students, but the thing we haven't talked about here is financial literacy for educational staff, and I know I benefited from as a teacher, financial literacy education. So I'm pleased to see that, and I think education staff need that as well. Thank you.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Eichheit, there, one thing I would note is just on the DEED website where we have the playbook, it's broken up by policies, but like by the different groups. So you can read it through by those areas that we presented, the 16, but also by the different stakeholder groups that might move things forward. And so it does address those. And then also to Representative Eichheit's comment, it is specifically there when it's talking about financial education. That is specifically speaking to making sure that educators understand their retirement options and how they can best maximize those. So that is the intent of that.
Okay. And Madam Chair, if I can move to my staff who is on the phone, Jennifer Schmitz, a longtime, very well-respected retired principal out of the Anchorage School District who is leading our Alaska Retention and Recruitment Center working hand-in-hand with the Department of Education and Early Development.
Thank you, Ms. Schmitz. If you could put your name on record and take us through the last few slides in about 5 or 6 minutes, we'd be grateful. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name, for the record, is Jennifer Schmitz. And I work for the Alaska Council of School Administrators, and I'm the director of the new center, the new Arts Center for Retention and Recruitment. My first two slides, I'll go through these quickly. The first two slides, we just recently did a survey of our members just to see if we were hearing the same thing. The first one, why teachers are staying in Alaska, we asked our principals and our superintendent members. And you can see that many of the things that we've talked about, positive culture, growing up here, liking community, and their tier two employees. And then on the flip side, why they're leaving, lack of defined benefits, better opportunities in Lower 48, cost of living in Alaska, and uncertainty of education funding. I could say I started teaching in Alaska in 1992, and although the cost of living may have been a little bit higher than other places then, these other things were not anything I had to worry about. I had a good defined benefit program. There were not better opportunities for me anywhere else, and funding was solid. And my husband's an educator, and I'm an educator, and it was just a really great place to be a teacher and then a principal and raise our kids here. So we're really connected and invested in education in Alaska.
Ms. Schmitz, could I ask a quick question on slide 18?
Yes.
The top four reasons are, it says 1, 2, 3, 4. Is this a rank ordered listing or is this just the top four?
It was just the top four.
Okay. So there's no particular ranking on those. Okay. Thank you.
I don't believe there was. Yep. And then the next slide, I think that, Director Manning and Dr. Faraday talked about this a little bit, but as we became a partner, with the Department of Education and created ARC, these are the areas that we're really focusing on. Some things are direct services. Some things are getting together stakeholders to talk about ways that we can partner and continue things that are already happening in the state. So this is just a visual so that you could see that. The next slide really talks about what we are doing with ARC. There's really three main branches. The first one, TRR implementation. That's what we're working with our stakeholder group. And I've told people a couple times, they're like, where did you get the stakeholders? We really made lists all over, or from people all over Alaska. And it's hard to say, we could have invited everybody. Everybody in the state should be a stakeholder in education. They are a stakeholder. But we have a group that we think is really well represented around the state. We do have some legislative representation with representatives Edmund, Representative Hinshu, and Senator Bjorkman. So thank you for that. This working group is really to, as they said already, to look at the playbook solutions and see if we can get them happening all over the state. And there are many of them that are already happening in areas, but we really are working to make sure that the opportunities are available to all districts and all communities. And then the middle column is Alaska Teacher and Personnel. That is another recommendation that was in the playbook, and we've been talking about it for a long time, about taking, putting the Alaska Teacher and Personnel program that used to be under the university over under ACSA. And ACMP is really a platform where all the districts post their jobs that they have open, and then all applicants from anywhere in the world can apply for jobs. They can also put their names in pools if there's not a job that's posted, but they want to be a counselor somewhere in a school district in Alaska, and then our school districts have access to those groups of applicants. And then also with Alaska Teacher and Personnel, we are doing job fairs. This year we did our first virtual job fair instead of an in-person one, and I'll talk about that in just a minute. And then the third bucket is international hire support. And this is something that's fairly new to us, but really important in our state right now is supporting districts in international hires. We have a lot of teachers across the state that are on visas and being sponsored by school districts. And unfortunately, in order to hire a teacher internationally, you usually are working with an agency. And unfortunately, some of the agencies we have found are taking advantage of both teachers and districts as far as money and hoops that they have to jump through throughout the year. And so under ARC, we are becoming an agency that can sponsor teachers and help districts with that so that we can keep it on the up and up, really, for everybody. And we're working with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development in order to do this. The next slide just talks about some of the things that we're working with in partnership with SEED as we're doing, as we put ARC together. We did have, as Dr. Parody mentioned, a convening along with our MCSS conference that was focused on recruitment. We held our first virtual job fair last a couple Saturdays ago on April 5th. And then along with our Alaska State Leadership Institute in May, we're going to focus that entire event on retention and helping districts with ideas for induction, retention, onboarding, any kinds of support they need that will help us keep our educators in Alaska and in our schools.
I'm going to stop you for a second, Ms. Schmitz, and ask Representative Story has a question for you.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Schmitz, could you talk a little bit about how many people did attend the virtual job fair and your takeaways from that, please?
Absolutely, through the chair. I would be happy to do that. I do have a slide coming up with all of the details on that.
Fine.
Could I do that then?
Perfect. Yep. Let's continue.
Okay. I'll go quickly. Again, that first column, I'm going to go back to those three columns. That first column was about the playbook implementation. We have the steering committee. You can see here the different areas that we have people representing the state on our steering committee. At the present time, we have quarterly meetings. We just had our quarterly meeting this week. To really, this first year, our goal is to get everybody grounded in the playbook, understand what the recommendations are, and then we're hearing from people, we call them content experts. We're hearing from people about what is going on. Like, this, for example, this last time, we heard from the department about apprenticeships that are happening, and we heard from Dana Gaffoe about a workplace exit and stay survey so that we can start really looking at why people are staying and going. And so our focus this year for that steering committee is really to get people grounded and know what's going on in our community.
I'm going to jump in for a second on the staying and going with the exit survey. I wasn't able to attend the second half of the steering committee meeting, but there's supposed to be an exit survey that's taking place. I would really like that to be compiled by ARC. Is that how that's happening?
To co-chair Hemshute, the exit and stay survey is being completed by the Institute for Social and Economic Research. Okay. So they're building the tool for us, but the intent is to be able to have it housed long term. But we need them to get the tool developed, make sure that it is, that we can do it to fidelity so that we can rely on the data. So they're doing it this year and likely next year so that they can respond to 2 years of data and make sure that we have a really solid tool that can be implemented within an organization for long-term
implementation. I'm hoping with support of ACSA because of the embedding in districts. So,
through the chair, just to add to that, absolutely thankful the Department of Education and ICER are working on getting this going. We want longitudinal data, right? And so we'll be hopefully administering that once it's going well. And we also hope to do an administrative component of that too. So more to come on that.
Okay. We only have about one more minute, Ms. Schmitz. I'm not sure if we can, as much as you can do in a minute.
Okay. I already talked about Alaska Teacher and Personnel, so I'm going to go on to the virtual job fair just so that you can. I know the slide's hard to see, but we had over 1,600 applicants who signed up originally. We had about 700 who showed up on the day of the event, with about 14 districts participating. Of the 1,600 that signed up, I believe just around 1,450 were international hires. Or international applicants. So we have a really high number of international applicants, and we're looking at ways to try and increase the applicants from the United States, but it's tough. And so we have some really strong international applicants, and we are working to help our districts get to, we have vetted some of the international applicants. We've interviewed some of them, and we've worked with our districts so that they can meet the international applicants that are highly qualified. And the next couple slides talk about our international applicants and the number of districts that are using international applicants. Sorry, I've got a duplicate there. And so the international hiring, I think I said this last time that I talked with all of you that it's not necessarily what we want to do, but we have to do it right now in our state. And we have some fabulous international teachers all over the state. And they're very connected to our communities and really helping us with the recruitment problem that we have right now. And then along with international hiring, we're not just supporting getting teachers interviewed, getting them into districts, supporting them. We're also supporting them after they get here, helping districts with onboarding. Again, we're a members organization. District reached out and said, our international teachers are great. They could do some help with positive, proactive classroom management. So through ASDM, we offered a class last year, over 200 teachers that were new to Alaska or new to teaching. Took that class. We're offering that again this spring for all of our new teachers that would like to take it at no cost to our district.
I think we're on slide 29.
Okay, and I think this has already been talked about. Dr. Parody talked about legislation. We are working on an omnibus bill to support some of the TRR recommendations. We're working with the steering committee, and then coming up in May, we have our Alaska School Leadership Institute that's going to focus on educator retention.
Okay.
On slide 30, if anybody there would like to be more involved, we would love to have you. You can scan that code to get to me or get more information.
Fabulous. Thank you for the Blitz presentation there. And to Deputy Director Manning and to Dr. Lisa Parody for your time here today. This has been, there's so much going on. And so much good going on. So thank you for making the time to be here today. We are going to conclude our meeting today. We have on April 16th a new bill, House Bill 174, the REAA Fund, Mount Edgecombe Teacher Housing by Representative Burke and staff. And then we hope to have kind of a Mount Edgecombe Day on Wednesday and bring in Superintendent Susan Huntington to talk about the history and current operations at Mount Edgecombe. And finally, the Department of Education will update us on the, I love saying it, burger, the Bond Reimbursement and Grant Review Committee on Capital Improvement Priorities, Project Priorities, all on Wednesday. And I want everyone to make sure they know we are not meeting on Friday, April 18th. So with no further business before the committee, it is 9:58 a.m., and we are adjourned.